Hey, welcome back to part three of our circulation and respiration module. This is kind of part two of part three. I decided to separate out the advanced cardiovascular testing just to give you a little break in between because it's pretty heavy stuff and I want to make sure you're fresh. These are basically blood tests for the lipids, but the fractions of the lipids. And it's not done that often. And what happens is when docs don't do this testing, things get missed and people are at risk and people may die as a result. And I just want to reemphasize that if my mom had had this testing by her doctor and then her doctor had been astute enough to give her some diet and lifestyle changes to do and some supplements to take, she'd probably be still alive. But nobody caught it and she just dropped dead suddenly. And guess what? That happens to a lot of people. Nobody knows they have cardiac disease until they die. So this is something that is really important for you to understand and be able to help your clients to order or help them get their doctors to order for them. So before we jump right in, again, this is not medical advice. This is not meant to replace working with a doctor. If you're on any medications or your clients are on medications, make sure before you jump in and do diet and lifestyle changes that they've got the okay from their doctor. So let's look at some of the advanced cardiovascular tests. First of all, we have the small dense LDL. What this is particle, right? There's particles of LDL. LDL is not just measurable as LDL total. And in fact, here's what happens on the regular panel that you do, the cardiovascular panel or the lipid panel, is that they don't measure LDL. They do an indirect calculation. So if you ever noticed on the test, it says LDL in open paren calc. There are tests that actually measure the LDL directly, but also look at the fractions of LDL. And this is really important. We're going to go into a lot of detail of it. The small dense LDLs are atherogenic. They're easily oxidized and they are small enough that they damage and then penetrate in to the wall of the endothelium and that forms a plaque. The LP little a, now not to be confused with apolipoprotein A, LP little a are small dense LDLs and they're involved in thrombosis. And I've given you links to everything here so that you could take a look at some articles and information about these. Here's something that hardly anybody's talking about, remnant lipoproteins. These are extremely atherogenic and they're similar in composition and density to plaque itself. So we believe that a lot of the plaque formed is based on this overproduction of remnant lipoprotein. It's believed to be that building block. And it doesn't need to be oxidized to be dangerous. It's dangerous in and of itself. Whereas the LDLs, the cholesterol, all this stuff needs to be oxidized before it becomes dangerous and atherogenic. The remnant lipoproteins are just that way. And then finally, we have LDL-2B, which positively correlates with heart health. And it's an indicator of how well the excess lipids are being removed from the body. So let's look at particle size. We have these large LDL particles and we have the small LDL particles. When people have the large LDLs, we're considering that pattern A. The smaller considered pattern B. The large LDLs have a lower risk of heart disease. The small LDLs have a higher risk of heart disease. So let's take a look at these lipoprotein particles. What we have depicted here are HDLs, which are down here in the lower corner. And we have two different types. We'll go into more detail, HDL2 and HDL3. We also have VLDA up at the top and VLDL remnants. And then we have in the middle, we have the LDL. And what's found in the plaques is only the LDLR, the IDL, which is intermediate sized lipoprotein, and then the lipoprotein little a, which is a subfraction of the LDL. These are the ones that they find in the plaques. This is the only ones that they find in the plaques. it's really important to understand the value of testing these fractions. So we have LDL pattern A. These are the large buoyant particles. They contain more fat and antioxidants than pattern B. And they also contain high levels of vitamin E, which is a potent antioxidant. Higher levels of these large buoyant particles, as found in the pattern A, have a lower risk of cardiovascular disease. And here's some of the lab findings. So when you test LDLs, they can be normal and they can be high. They can also be low. It's not the quantity total of LDL, it's the fractions that make a difference. The HDLs are generally normal in this pattern. The triglycerides are generally normal. So if a person has high LDL, but normal triglycerides, normal HDL, you cannot say that they're at risk unless you do the particle size test. And the large particle size test is done on a test called the VAP, but there's also some other newer tests that we're going to go through that do this. The VAP has been around for a long time, but it got discontinued by the original company that was doing it, and it's just resurfaced. This is a healthy pattern, even if the LDL is high. So let me repeat that. Normal HDLs, normal triglycerides is a healthy pattern regardless of what the LDL level is. And that's not what people are being taught. A lot of people freak out when their LDLs are high. But what they really need to do before freaking out is go through the process of testing these. Now, that said, if people are, as a result of their LDLs being high, propelled into making diet and lifestyle changes, then great, let them do that. But if they're leaning towards conventional medical intervention, like taking statins and such, then you want to ask them, recommend that they get the patterns before they jump into that. In pattern A, with the large-sized subparticles, the triglycerides and HDL ratio is closer to 1. Like the ideal, like we talk about that in insulin resistance. We want that triglyceride-HDL ratio to be 1, right around 1. That means there's usually more large LDL particles. So if you're looking at somebody and they have this really great triglyceride-HDL ratio, it's close to 1, then they probably have more of these. So if somebody doesn't want to get the testing done, you can use the triglyceride-HDL ratio as a rough estimate. Let's look at LDL pattern B. These are small, dense LDL particles, and they have 3 times greater risk of causing atherosclerotic plaque. 3 times greater risk. They also have less fat-soluble antioxidants in them, like vitamin A. So we're not having that protective effect going out and preventing oxidative damage to the tissue. The problem with these small, dense particles is that they can slip into the endothelial wall and get trapped because they're so small. They cause oxidation and significant endothelial damage. Let's look at the lab pattern in pattern B. Well, the LDLs can still be low, normal, or high. So we can't just use the total LDLs. But the HDLs are going to be low and the triglycerides are going to be high. One of the most common lab patterns to find on just the basic lipid panel is that somebody has high triglycerides and low LDL. And this could be indicative of the pattern B with the small LDL particles. When the triglyceride-HDL ratio is greater than 2, they likely have excess small dense LDL particles. Not always, but it's a good indicator, especially if somebody's on a budget and their insurance won't cover getting the panel done. The lipoprotein particle testing identifies twice as many people at risk. So it's a great test to do to identify people at risk. When would you do it? I would say if somebody has, you know, not such great diet habits, and they have a family history of cardiovascular disease, and they have these high triglycerides, then I would recommend you get this test done. So let's look at what causes the pattern B findings. Fats. Not just any fats, though. Too much trans fat. We know trans fats are oxidized fats. They're damaging. They cause free radical damage. Rampant increase in prostaglandin E2 and all the inflammatory cytokines. They cause massive amounts of free radicals and they cause tissue damage. So trans fats, we already know, people should be avoiding, but this is yet another reason to get them to avoid it, especially if they have a family history of heart disease like me. I am don't touch, ever touch trans fats. And then they're deficient in the fats that actually can heal them. The omega-3s, like EPA DHA, omega-9, which is found in olives and avocados and a little bit in sesame. And then the saturated fats, but in coconut, have been found to increase HDL and enhance the pattern A findings. So good fats, bad fat. It's not fat that's bad. It's not fat that's bad. It's the bad fats that are bad. So you got to get them off of the bad fats and onto the good fats. We know this already, but this is just more reason to do it. And of course, we know that sugar is not good for anybody. But the sugar contributes to pattern B findings, causes a rapid rise in blood sugar and insulin. And then the insulin increases triglycerides and cholesterol and promotes inflammation. Grains, they're a little bit slower in the release of sugar, so a little bit slower in the release of insulin, but they still can result in a prolonged increase of insulin. So we've got to be checking people and avoiding it if they have a risk of heart disease. And then finally, high fructose corn syrup, which, you know, has gotten a bad rap and it is rightly deserved. It stimulates lipogenesis, which is the production of fat, by turning into glycerol. It's the backbone for triglycerides, right? One glycerol, three fatty acids. What happens with high fructose corn syrup is that the fatty acids accumulate in the liver and the skeletal muscle. It causes insulin resistance, and then non-alcoholic fatty liver disease can result. It congests the liver. It makes the liver sluggish. It creates toxins and free radicals, which lead to glycation. And remember, glycation is the sugar coating of the red blood cells. We measure that with hemoglobin A1C, glycosylated hemoglobin. It can also create large quantities of uric acid, which is a risk factor for gout and kidney stones. It inhibits the production of endothelial nitric oxide synthase, which decreases the production of nitric oxide, which is a potent vasodilator. So all these things factor together to say sugar needs to be avoided. And we see these dietary things as a cause of those small, dense LDL particles. So how do you know if somebody has a problem with these particle sizes? Well, you can test. And guess what? It improves the detection of heart disease risk by 40 to 90%. That's huge, and it's well worth it. The VAP is a test I used to do ages ago, and they discontinued it. It was very inexpensive for what it was. It used to be $99. So I'm not sure what the current tests are going for at this point, but they're well worth it, especially with somebody with a history of cardiovascular disease in themselves or in their family. So the first one is VAP, Vertical Analyzer Profile. Wow. Why is it called that? I have no idea. It's now run by VAP Diagnostics. There's their link and their customer service line. The other one is the Lipoprotein Particle Profile from SpectraCell. And there's a link to that. And I've got samples of the reports you get from these. Then we have the NMR Lipo Profile Test from LabCorp. They have a version that has a report or graphs with it, and they have a version without. Unfortunately, their website didn't have any sample reports. So I couldn't show you what they look like. The Cardio IQ report from Quest Diagnostics. And that one, again, their website didn't have much in terms of a sample report. So I don't know what the test results look like, but they look like they measured the same or close to the same parameters. Now, there may be slight differences from one to the next, but if you're going to order them, I suggest you research. So let's take a look. When we do lipoprotein particle testing, we end up giving the person a complete picture of their cardiovascular risk, their lipids in their blood. It's not just cholesterol, HDL, LDL, total cholesterol, HDL, LDL. No, it's much more profound than that. The HDL actually has two subfractions, HDL2, which is most protective, and HDL3, which is a little less protective. We've got LDL, which is broken down into LP little a, lipoprotein little a, IDL, which is intermediate, and then LDLR, which is the subfractions, right? So under the subfractions, we've got the buoyant ones, which call into pattern A. We've got the tiny ones, the dense ones, which are pattern B. And then you have some people who fall in the middle in terms of the amounts, and we call that pattern AB. Then we have VLDL. We have VLDL 1 and 2 and VLDL 3. So let's take a look in more detail. This is a picture from the old test, the old VAP test, which gave a nice summary of what all these are. Now, I couldn't find anything from the newer test. You have to actually order the test, I guess, but I liked this because it was a nice summary. So the LDL cholesterol direct, remember I said earlier that on the regular blood lipid panel that you get at Quest or LabCorp, they don't measure the LDL. What they do is calculate it based on the HDL and the total cholesterol. That's not accurate. They give you the total HDL, which is the same as on the regular lipid panel. They also measure the total VLDL, the very low density lipoprotein. And it's a very big carrier of triglycerides and increases the risk for heart disease. So then they get the total cholesterol, just like the regular testing. The triglycerides they measure directly, and the non-HDL cholesterol. Now, this is important. Most of the tests don't do this. So what they want to give you is how much of the cholesterol is not HDL. That's a very good indicator of cardiac risk. The higher the number, the more the risk. Then we have total apolipoprotein B100. And remember earlier we said that the ApoA carried the HDL, was part of the HDL, and the ApoB was associated with LDL. Well, a measure of this, you want to look at what's the balance here, right? What's the balance? How does it look? The apolipoprotein B100 helps form, carry, and deliver the LDLs to the cells. So when you know what the person's ApoB100 is, it increases the predictive value for cardiac disease. LP little a, lipoprotein little a, is part of LDL. It's a fraction of LDL. This is the one that tends to be very much associated with genetics. We talk about people who have genetic hypercholesterolemia. They have risk factors, okay? There's a gene that associates with LP little a. And it doesn't seem to be affected. It doesn't seem to go up or down based on lifestyle factors or even the drugs that are typically prescribed. We have IDL, which is the intermediate density lipoprotein. And the IDL tends to be very much associated with genetics too, only it does respond to intervention on a diet and lifestyle fashion. The intermediate IDL tend to be related to people with a family history of diabetes. Then we have the LDLR, is the real cholesterol circulating in the body. It's a component of the total. And then the sum total is the total of LP little a, IDL, and real LDL. That's the stuff that we typically see. But again, it's calculated, not actually measured. And then the size pattern, that's the important part. And it refers to the cholesterol's density. That's the pattern A and pattern B that we just talked about. And then the other thing that some of the tests do and some of them don't is they look at metabolic syndrome. They basically look at the triglyceride HDL ratio. They look at the ratio between HDL and HDL2. So metabolic syndrome markers are not done on all of the tests. It's done on some of them. And they're looking at the basically the triglyceride HDL ratio, but also the relationship of total HDL to HDL2, which is the protective HDL. So the HDL2, like I said, is the protective part of the HDL. And when it's low, there's a higher risk of atherosclerosis and coronary artery disease, even when patients have what? Normal cholesterol. So if somebody has normal cholesterol and low HDL2, they're at risk, especially if they have high triglycerides. HDL3 doesn't play as great a protective role in protecting from disease as does HDL2. It's not bad. It's not dangerous. It's just not as protective. So if somebody has great HDLs, right? Say they have HDLs are 75, but it turns out that they have lower levels of HDL2 and the 3 is higher. They're not as protected as you might think. Then we have VLDL3, which is a very triglyceride-rich lipid molecule, and it provides an independent risk factor for heart disease. What does that mean? It means that that elevated on its own, without any of the other problems, can put a person at risk. So those, you have it, the 3 pages of markers. I highly suggest that you check out some of these links if you want to go deeper into detail. This is a sample of the VAP, and that's from the VAP Diagnostics Company. It's just a really nice report, actually. I like the way they lay it out. I like the way they give risk factors. They measure total cholesterol, triglycerides, total LDL, total HDL, the non-HDL cholesterol, and then the LDL particles. And what it does is it puts the numbers in a column as to whether it signifies low, moderate, or high risk. So they show the particle concentration is high. It's too high. At the bottom, they show more detail. They have the LDL that takes out the intermediate and all the other things. So just the straight LDL. They show the total. They show the HDL2. They show the HDL3. They show the IDL. Then they show the total VLDL, which is a combination of VLDA plus VLDL3, the VLDL3, the remnant lipoproteins, which is a combination of IDL and VLDL. Then they show the density pattern. Is it pattern A? Is it pattern B? Or is it AB? This particular person was AB. But if it had been A, you would have seen the number A in the low column. And if it was B, you'd see the B in the high column. But as you look at this, you can see that this person has quite a number of risk factors. So even though their total cholesterol is perfectly fine, their total HDL is a little bit on the low side. When we do this test, you see so much more and see that this person actually is at risk. This is the value of doing this test. This is another sample. It's from the SpectraCell report. So SpectraCell calls it the LPP, the lipoprotein particle test. So what we see here is that they show VLDL, total LDL, non-HDL. They break that down into remnants, small dense LDL, the large LDL, so the A and the B. And then they show total HDL and then the large buoyant HDL. So you see that there's a lot of breakdown here. In the next part, they show the ApoB 100. They show the lipoprotein little a. They show the metabolic syndrome traits, C-reactive protein, high sensitivity, insulin, and homocysteine. So you see this is a much more comprehensive test, has a lot more values in it. A total cholesterol, LDL cholesterol, HDL cholesterol, triglycerides, and then the non-HDL. So you can see that this is a more comprehensive, they do a lot of the other tests. Now, if the person's already had their CRP done and their homocysteine done and their insulin done, then you can go ahead and order the VAP. But if you really want a comprehensive picture for people, this would be the way to go. The report just shows the standard high or low, good or bad. You can just tell how they're doing based on where they show in the range. The thing I like about the sample report from SpectraCell, I don't know how it is with VAP because they didn't have a sample report. I like a lot of the interpretation tools that they provide. So we're not going to go through all of this, but I'm providing it to you for your reference. They say step 1, primary risk assessment. Step two is modify risk using metabolic syndrome traits, lipoprotein little a, intermediate risk, and then finally determine therapeutic approach. And there's a link to this report right there. Here's a graph. They give you a graph. So they graph out all of these findings, and you see at the top, you can see the graph. You can tell what the person's risk is based on this. And again, you can look at it in more detail and spend time studying it when you go to that link. And we have this other report that you get with SpectraCell. So they graph it at the top and they give you down below. So it's just another way of looking at the numbers and giving you the values and then reference ranges and then alert notes. So it's just another way to report it. And finally, that's probably too small for anybody to read, no matter what their age. But this is a sample of the last page in the report, and they give their own therapeutic intervention suggestions. So you can take it, you can leave it, but it gives you an idea and a place to start. It can be very helpful. This is an action plan that we got from the original. There's no link. I can't tell you where to find this because that website has been taken down. But I had copied this and I like it because it just gives you a simple little way approach. With elevated LDLs, low-fat diet, exercise. Now, low-fat diet is relative. We want to have a low oxidized fat diet. We want to have balanced fats, and you know all that. And we'll go through more in our therapeutic section. Elevated LPA, nothing has really been shown to be effective at lowering that. You just have to get everything else in balance to reduce the overall risk. Elevated IDL was a low-carb diet because it's associated with insulin resistance, and exercise because both of those things improve insulin sensitivity. Small, dense LDL, pattern B or AB, a low carbohydrate diet, again, reduced sugar intake and exercise. Remember, that's one's associated with high triglycerides, low HDL, which is associated with what? Metabolic syndrome. The remnant lipoproteins, again, reducing carbohydrates. The low HDL2 aerobic exercise has been found to be very helpful. With VLDL and elevated triglycerides, again, we're looking at low carbohydrate diet, reducing sugar, obviously, and exercise. So a lot of these are associated with, guess what? Metabolic syndrome and insulin resistance. And we have very good strategies for improving that. And if they show up with the metabolic syndrome, obviously, you know, no sugar, moderate fat, and lots of exercise. And of course, fat is what? Good fat. Finally, we're going to look at remnant lipoprotein. So remnant lipoproteins are partially catabolized, broken down components of chylomicrons and the VLDLs. Remember, chylomicrons help support the body in digesting fat. They line the digestive tract. They tend to be the really big lipoproteins. Now, it's all relative, right? None of them are big, but compared to the others, if you remember the chart we had, some of the triglycerides have been removed from these, so they're remnants. They're not complete. And they're smaller and denser than the parent particles, and they're strongly atherogenic. So this is an important one for you to be looking at. Well, you're certainly not going to get your standard lipid panel to show this kind of stuff. This is really, really important stuff. Finally, I have references. So there's links to all the different things I referenced in there. Then this is a list of references from SpectraCell. I don't expect you to be able to read it, but if you go to that link that I gave you on their site, you're going to see the references. So they have some good information. So thank you for being here. Thank you for sitting through all of this great information on assessments. And the next module is all about therapeutics. It's all about balancing protocols. So I'll see you on the next section.